2 years later, Japan continues to shun nuclear power.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, the 11th of March, which is exactly 2 years to the day since a horrific series of disasters in Japan, an earthquake, a tsunami, and a nuclear meltdown. Well, today, the anniversary is being marked with protests against nuclear power, and the BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes is with us from Tokyo with the details. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So a day of commemoration today, 2 years since the earthquake and tsunami and nuclear disaster, but also today it seems a day of protest.
There have been protests over the weekend and into today, really to tell the new government of Japan that the people do not want to return to nuclear power. And they have deliberately timed this to coincide with the second anniversary because, of course, the new government of Japan has said it wants to switch those nuclear power plants back on. But nuclear power, following the nuclear disaster 2 years ago, is extremely unpopular here. People are very afraid now of the potential consequences following, you know, what was a massive disaster.
But can Japan's economy survive without nuclear power?
Well, at the time, everybody said no. Everybody said there would be blackouts, there would be electricity rationing, that they wouldn't make it through the summer. But we've now gone 2 years without really any nuclear power on. One reactor only has been switched back on. And Japan has got by, mainly by importing massive amounts of natural gas from overseas. It's expensive, but it's continued to work.
Now, you just visited the Fukushima plant. You went inside. What was that like?
It was a very strange experience. And what is really striking there is, firstly, that there is a massive amount of work going on. There are 3,000 people now working at that plant to bring it under control, to dismantle it, to get the radioactive material out of the reactors. And the second thing is really just the scale of the task ahead of them. We were told it's going to take 30 to 40 years at least until that plant is fully shut down and the radioactive material removed. And the radiation Wow. levels there, we went past reactor 3, which is the one they're most worried about. The radiation levels there are equivalent in 1 hour to taking 10 chest x-rays or in 3 hours, a full body CT scan. So you get an idea of just how much radiation there still is coming out of those reactors.
Glad you're safely back in Tokyo, Rupert. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, tomorrow, Microsoft is releasing software fixes to correct several bugs and plug security holes to protect against hacking. If you hadn't noticed, these kinds of security updates are becoming much more frequent, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports.
Security and software updates on your computer are beyond irritating. Ask NASA. Last month, it lost contact with the space station for 3 hours because of a software update.
Just FYI, the station's still flying straight.
Expect more of these fixes as hackers become increasingly aggressive, says Chester Wisniewski with network security company Sophos.
We see nearly 20,000 new malicious web URLs every single day on the internet, so this is a very wide-scale problem.
It's not just a PC thing either.
Well over 1 million Macintoshes compromised in the last 12 months, so that could be the beginnings of, unfortunately, the Mac catching up with the PC.
But why do these updates have to be so irritating? Wolfgang Kandick is chief technical officer with computer security firm Qualys. He says there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
The older the software is, the more cumbersome it is. Newer softwares do this in a better way.
So fewer pesky pop-ups, fewer computer restarts, more software will update without you even knowing it. It's also worth remembering that the only thing more annoying than a security update is getting hacked. I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
The grocery chain Whole Foods has announced a big change. In the next few years, it's going to require all of its products that contain genetically modified food ingredients to be labeled that way. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Whatever the science, consumers are jumpy about genetically modified foods. At least they are in Europe. For years, restaurants and grocery stores there have trumpeted their products are GMO-free. Food studies professor Marianne Nessel is with New York University.
Even McDonald's in Italy and in Great Britain advertises that its products don't contain any GMOs. So it depresses use of genetically modified foods.
In the U.S., Whole Foods plans to label products with GMOs inside. But will our market follow Europe's lead and reject them? American farms grow the most genetically modified foods in the world, and our diet is already full of high-tech grains. The real test may be price, says Harry Balzer of the NPD Group.
Nothing will change your behavior faster, short of a food safety issue, than prices. And we will never let food prices rise faster than our incomes.
A study from Iowa State suggests non-genetically modified foods could end up costing 6 to 10% more around the world. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, to a little town on the White Cliffs of Dover on the English side of the English Channel, just 18 miles from Calais, France. Turns out that proximity to France is causing headaches for residents who have to turn off their mobile phones in order to avoid roaming charges. According to the Telegraph, some phone companies are sending local residents messages that say welcome to France with a list of charges every time they power up. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.